This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It is a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. So this sex ed bill, which would have government employees starting to talk to your kids about sex starting in kindergarten now. Even though the majority of parents do not want sex ed for elementary school, K through 5, the state, and I know exactly why. I told you on Monday, if you weren't listening on what was a holiday for a lot of people, I'll do this again at 2 o'clock because the superintendent of public instruction, Chris Rakedahl, he's going to come on with me at 2 o'clock to talk about this. But, I mean, some of the things that they're going to be talking to your and my children about is just absolutely shocking. And, again, the reason is they do not believe that parents should have control of kids. And in Washington, now if you're 13 years old, you can completely cut your parents out of any medical conversations if you have gender dysphoria or anxiety or other issues. You have to say, I will allow my parents to have this information shared with them. And now they want to take control in the schools, but it is a gradual takeover of our children by the government. And there are some really dark forces within that are pushing cult-like agendas from within. And it's something you need to be absolutely aware of. So we will talk about all of this coming up with the superintendent of public instruction starting at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Just want to give you a quick update. We're selling those T-shirts to fight the vile hatred of Lana Kiyosofsky, the co-owner of the St. John's Bar and Eatery on Capitol Hill. And we are over 1,000 T-shirts. That was our goal. We wanted to sell 1,000 T-shirts, and we're making $10 per shirt. So we're going to send $10,000, more than, thanks to our listeners, to the mom in South Carolina whose daughter, 9-year-old daughter, and the girl's dad, shot and killed in a hunting accident for a Capitol Hill bar and restaurant owner, decided to make that a point of mocking and glee that this child and father were shot and killed. But we decided to fight back with love. And you can still get T-shirts if you text LOVE to our text line, 98973. Text the word LOVE to 98973, and we'll send you a link if you want to get one of the T-shirts. And again, all the proceeds are going to go to this family in South Carolina that was so hurtfully and hatefully slurred by Lana Kiyosofsky at the St. John Bar and Eatery on Capitol Hill.
And please keep sending us your photos of you in the in the shirts, because we'd like to send those to the family as well.
Yeah, we've gotten a bunch of pictures from listeners. You can send them to our Facebook. You can email them to me. But send your pictures if you bought a shirt, and we'll make sure we gather all that together in a post as well. Okay, let's get to this fastest 15 here. So a couple of days ago, the Attorney General said that Tim Iman, even though he's under bankruptcy, and Bob Ferguson says Tim Iman owes the state hundreds of thousands of dollars because he isn't complying with some court order.
Right.
And it's increasing by $500 a day.
Right.
So Tim Iman had to file bankruptcy, and Bob Ferguson, in what looked to be just an attempt to humiliate Iman, he released detailed Iman spending. 1 month, he spent $450 on internet and streaming services and purchases at an Apple store. And I thought, well, one purchase at an Apple store, that can be hundreds of dollars. But the most salacious thing was he said that every few weeks, Tim Iman gets a $79 haircut. And so we had Iman on. How much did you pay for a haircut?
I pay $40.
Okay.
Which is actually, for a woman, is really low.
Yeah, my wife, I think that's about what my wife pays.
Yeah, and but, I, the person who does it, I always have to just tip big because I think she spends so much time doing a beautiful job straightening my hair. Every time I get my hair cut, it gets straightened. I don't know how come she doesn't charge me more. So I'm like, I'll give you a big tip.
Oh, yeah. Well, I pay $16 for my haircut.
Which is reasonable. And it's a great deal, actually.
And I think, yeah, the cut. They do a great job. And I think that, you know, it's my hair. Look, it's like putting earrings on a pig, grooming my hair. So what does it matter if I spend $16?
But $79 is every couple of weeks.
Every few weeks.
Yeah, it sounds a little high. But that's the salacious thing. The other things that are a little more worrisome are spending $24,000 a month over the past year.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of spending. I don't spend 24 grand a month.
Unfortunately, don't even make that in a year.
But I asked Iman when he came on, was it just yesterday? Yeah, it was just yesterday. I asked him, we talked about all the substantive stuff, the bankruptcy, and he says that Fergie's on a witch hunt against him. But I asked him about the $79 haircuts.
Who in the world pays $79 for a haircut?
Somebody who likes to tip and who goes to the same guy for 20 years. I'm loyal. I go to James at Northgate Gene Juarez. I encourage everybody to go there. James is a really good guy.
$79, Tim?
So it started low, it started going up, and I'm not going to change horses in midstream. I believe that he does a good job, and I think the reality is this is what people care about, the price of a haircut, whether or not it's comparable to an office chair at Office Depot. I mean, it is some of the silliest things in the world because they can't actually defend Jay Inslee being governor for the last 8 years, and they certainly can't justify 4 more years of Jay Inslee.
I do enjoy that he will just drop in the chair that he stole in the course of a conversation like that. But anyway, a listener reached out to me after that Iman interview and said, Dory, are you aware? So I printed this from the Gene Juarez website. You know, when you go to Gene Juarez, and there are probably other places that do this. I'm not trying to pick on Gene Juarez. But you also have to pay an environmental stewardship fee.
Oh, yeah.
Is this common?
Only because Gene Juarez has said that they want to be great stewards of the environment. So I think it's how they dispose of the water, the soap that they use, et cetera, et cetera.
So dumb. They say that...
They put it out front.
If it's over $35, they charge you a $2 environmental stewardship fee. And they say, we seek a third party to hand recycle all of our service waste.
There you go.
They say the cost is extremely high. And they all said that they like to recycle and reuse, like, the clippings. And this recycle place takes the clippings and they process them in a... through this initiative, we will use hair clippings to create...
What'd Gene Juarez do to you?
I know.
Through this initiative, we will use hair clippings to create oil booms.
Hey, oh. Fancy.
Smelt aluminum and other metals to produce clean energy. Process hair color in centrifuges to separate water from chemicals and ensure the safe disposal of batteries, blow dryers, and light bulbs.
I'm actually surprised it's only a buck or two.
I want to see the oil boom that's made out of hair clippings. And just the fact that they say, oh, and anytime there's an oil spill, your hair is going to soak it up because we're so environmentally sound.
But this brings up something. Okay, so this environmental stewardship fee, or it kind of falls for me. It falls right under the category of also when stores say, hey, do you want to round up to donate to that? And I just keep thinking, why don't you round up?
Well, I hate it when they ask me, do you want to make a donation to whatever? Because then the corporation, they bundle all of those, they make a donation, they get a huge tax deduction.
Cut. Yeah, exactly.
My wife and I, we are happy with the level we donate, and I don't need to be hit up by some other company, not because they want to help people, but because they want a big, fat tax cut.
Well, not to mention, you don't even know where exactly that money is going to go.
No! You know what? As my mom would have said, it's all a big come on. All of this nonsense. Okay, next up in the fastest 15. Schools are trying to, I've certainly seen this myself, that kids are so obsessed with their phones, and they use the phones to cheat. One of the big things is that lately they coordinate trips to the bathroom if they're in different classes so they can all meet and vape at the same time. So they text each other and talk about when they're going to get out of class so they can go vape together. And so now schools are experimenting with just taking away students' phones. One school that's being profiled in the story, the teachers have a clear plastic bag, fastens it to her waist at the beginning of the day, and then she goes around and makes every kid hand over their phone, and she holds them until the end of the school day. So two things about this. Number one, how many kids have burner phones that they put in the teacher pack while they still keep another one the teacher doesn't know about? But number two, I think I even talked about this on the show. Last time I took a high school basketball team to state, and I was thinking about taking away the girls' phones at state because I wanted them to just be fully immersed in the experience and in each other. And I didn't want them to just be sitting and isolated because phones tend to make you isolated. And if you want to maximize a team experience.
Well, they're just so distracting, too.
Yeah. So I talked to a coach that I really respect who had taken away his kids' phones, and he swore by it. He said, yeah, absolutely. It's the right thing. So then after I talked to this coach, I talked to my captains. Who were very, they were just really super intelligent and very broad thinking. And I talked to them, talked about the pros and cons, and they laid out a case for me. They said the separation anxiety is going to be so bad with some of the girls that they said we fear it'll do more harm than good.
Separation from what?
From their
just
phone.
The physical phone.
From their phone. And which I can kind of relate to.
There is a term for it.
Yeah.
We've discussed it.
A few months ago, I came to work and I didn't have my phone. Mm-hmm. I realized it about halfway here. I was a basket case. I'm constantly touching my pocket. My phone's not there. It's incredible how they have bored their way into our brains and our souls so that we're inseparable from them.
There have been a couple times when I've left work and I've left my phone charging and I almost get all the way home and I'm thinking, I can't go overnight. So I drive all the way back.
Yeah.
It's called nomophobia.
No mo?
Uh-huh. No mobile. Nomophobia.
Oh, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I decided to not
FOMO.
Confiscate the phones, but I said...
I'm surprised.
I wrestled with it. And I think with the help of my kids... my basketball kids, I think I arrived at a really good compromise. I gave them 1 hour in the evening when they could be on their phones. And I said, but we're going to be on the trust, but I'm going to have each of you hold each other accountable. No phones outside of that 1 hour window. And as far as I know,
that's fair.
They honored that. But they just made the case. If you separate kids from their phones, they will be fidgety and jittery. And so that's what these schools that are taking away phones are dealing with. The phone separation anxiety. They said kids are, they just can't focus. They are so jittery.
That is a sad, sad commentary.
It's also a commentary on how brilliant these mobile companies have been at capturing our minds. And it's not just kids, because adults are the same way, like I said. But yeah, they have figured out a way to just control us with these phones. And
I think it goes beyond just wanting to look at it or needing to look at it, but you've set an expectation where people expect an immediate response, whether you're the person receiving it or you're the person asking for a response, you expect it to be immediate. And anything outside of that, you feel like you're disappointing if you didn't respond immediately. You feel like you're lost if somebody is reaching out and can't find them.
If I text my daughters and I don't get a response within 30 seconds, I wonder if something's wrong.
Yep.
I start panicking as the sender of the message. And I need my phone here at work because at least 5 times a day, I pretend like I'm talking on the phone to get out of a conversation with people.
Are you kidding me?
With coworkers. No, of course.
You really do that?
Of course.
Because
I
saw you grab your phone as I was walking by
that
your desk.
Real. That one was real today.
You never know.
That was real. I'll show you my recent calls.
You never know.
I was about to say something.
But no, it is absolutely essential if you are going to just function in the workplace that you have a
that's
seriously
a good one.
I really got a call when you were walking by. I remember that vividly this morning. I'll show you my recent calls.
Okay, I believe you.
Okay, finally. Oh, gosh, I'm excited for this. Taylor Swift's new Netflix special is coming out, and the trailer is one of the most unintentionally comical things where, she always seemed like, early on, when she was doing the soft country songs, she seemed like she was kind of a sweet kid. Now she's just a basket case like the rest of them.
Just gonna go have fun. No one out there that I know of in the audience actively hates me. Not get dead face.
Ready to do this?
Ready. Totally ready. Throughout my whole career, label executives would just say, a nice girl doesn't force their opinions on people. A nice girl smiles and waves and says thank you. I became the person everyone wanted me to be.
It's like a parody of, somebody on Twitter was saying, of those pop star movies. They couldn't parody it any better. But the former nice girl who now feels a need to speak up, and she doesn't care. It's just so ridiculous.
You know what, though? You may not agree with her politics, but, I mean, she's not that little girl anymore. She is a grown woman.
Well, I think that's part of the point, is that she really was just this innocent little girl that she evolved.
Because now she
but
has...
it's not like anybody. I don't think she was held back that. I mean, I don't know what she went through, but I think she was a little girl when she came into this.
I'll give you an example. I was listening. Billy Joel did a town hall that I was listening to a couple of days ago, and they were taking questions from the people in attendance. And somebody started to ask a political question. Everybody else started booing because everyone else was just there to talk about the music. And Billy Joel said, why would you ask a piano player that question? Nobody cares. He goes, nobody cares what my opinion is on any of that stuff. And I thought, that's the right way to play it, because nobody does care.
I think that's part of her ploy here, is that she was kind of losing steam. So then she had to reinvent herself, and then lost steam on the pop side. Then she had to reinvent herself. So this gets her.
Well, good luck. This Netflix special, I'll be glued. I'll be Mr. First Nighter with that. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
Give us 15 minutes and we'll give you the world. Hey, it's Wednesday afternoon. That means it's time for our weekly visit with Brock Huard. We'll do that coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-woo!
It's hump day with Huard.
Blue in it, check. Brown, 24, razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Where the 12s hear the Hawks.
Play fake to Penny Russell, lets it go. Down the far sideline. Reaching up, making the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks!
Here's Dory Monson.
It is Wednesday afternoon, and that means it's time. Hump day with Huard. Brock Huard joins us after really a triumphant day playing around the world on Sunday at the Monson House.
Yeah.
Your stroke for a big man, for a lanky fellow.
Yeah.
Your 3-point shot's not too bad.
Yeah, there's not many quarterbacks you're going to find, Dory, with broke shots.
Yeah.
Like Jordan Babinos. You're not going to find many quarterbacks, I don't think, just because you have to have some level of touch, finesse,
sure.
spatial awareness, feel. Most quarterbacks that I've ever known in my lifetime typically are pretty good shooters. And I'm not the shooter Big Brother Damon was. I mean, Damon could really feel it. I was more of a passer. I was an okay shooter. But, yeah, in your audience on Sunday, I appreciate that because I went home. I felt good about myself.
Well, you should.
It'd been a while since I'd won. And I felt like, you know, not just once. I won twice. And just felt good about being victorious.
I remember when I first met you and didn't know you very well. And this is when I had my cubicle against the window, back when the company gave me a little respect and let me have a window seat.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember one day you came up and you threw down on my desk and said, check that out. And it was the all-time top 10 in every category.
Puyallup High School record
for
book.
Puyallup High School basketball.
Yep.
And I didn't know you, and I thought, who's this Jack Weed?
Who's this whippersnapper?
Who's this guy?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny you bring that up, because I remember years ago going to your house, playing on your home court, and thinking, gosh, this Monson's, he's a pretty amazing shooter.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's one of those guys that you play with, and you're, wow. This guy can really play basketball. Yeah. He may not look the part, but he can play it.
Here's what I discovered Sunday. You actually need your legs to shoot. And I haven't used my legs in a couple of months.
Woo! Yeah, it was tough. Yeah, it was rough. But what a great time. Isn't that fun? That was just so much fun.
I said on the air on Monday that I just don't have enough guy bonding.
Yeah.
So just guys and football and steaks.
Yep.
You know, you've got a couple of daughters. You have a wife. You know that sometimes you just need to break away. You know, I have Nicole. I have Ursula. I'm just surrounded by women.
You got three daughters.
Yes, in every element of my life. And once in a while, I need to break free.
Yes.
And
you're like my buddy Graham, my dentist buddy, with four daughters.
Yeah.
And then 15 hygienists. Yes.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
Yeah. And every once in a while, Graham we call him Silverback. He just needs that time to, you know, to go play and compete and eat and have fun. And that was certainly all of that wrapped up on Sunday.
So you make sure, I mean, whether it's a fishing getaway or football and steaks, you seem to be at the center.
Yes.
Every time
of your manhood.
You're the center of my manhood.
Great.
Yes.
Awesome.
And that also raises an important question. Why are there no male hygienists?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know that.
Just toss that out.
Okay. Put that to your audience.
All right.
There might be. It would surprise me. Somewhere there is.
Yeah.
But yeah, not many.
A couple things I wanted to talk to you about. Okay, so we watched the championship games. 11-year low in ratings, those two games.
Yes.
The Seahawks, I think, would have given San Francisco a much better tussle than Green Bay did.
No question.
And you know, I know that you were talking on your podcast about the Seahawks and whether Pete Carroll, he does the way San Francisco did, just pound the ball. If you can only pass eight times in a game.
Well, let's be clear here. San Francisco did it the way Seattle did it.
Okay, that's a good point.
You know what I'm saying? They took Seattle's widget and said, that widget's still pretty good. And you know what? We're going to have four straight losing seasons. We're going to draft number 2 overall, number 4 overall, 4 top 10 picks.
Yeah.
And we're going to take these 4 down linemen, all of which turned out to be hits, could all play. And we're going to do what the Seahawks did in 12 and 13 and 14.
Yeah.
And that is play incredible defense, that is embarrass and humiliate the opposing quarterbacks many times, as they did Aaron Rodgers. And then that is take the air out of the ball on the other side and just be more physical. I mean, they just physically manhandled and whooped. You talked about ratings. There's not many times that you've watched an NFL game, especially on that stage. I mean, last year, both those games went to overtime, where you had an opponent humiliated.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers didn't want to play.
Right.
He didn't want to dive for a fumble. He didn't. His body language from the outset was like, I don't have a chance here. This isn't going to be fun. I'm going to get trashed.
Right.
And he did.
Yeah, not diving for a fumble. That reminded me of Cam Newton in the Super Bowl.
The way his leg was, you see the way my leg was bent, I couldn't really dive for the football.
Is that what he said?
That's what Cam Newton said.
Oh.
Yeah, the way my leg was bent, I couldn't dive for it. Aaron Rodgers didn't even have an excuse.
No.
He just looked at it and said, yeah, this day's not for me.
I'm out.
So ratings were down, and kudos to San Francisco, because that was there have been two occasions, really, in the last few years, I've watched a team and went, wow. That's like the Seahawks used to be.
Dominant.
Just physically dominant, a speed, faster, a will, where you just know, like, that's going to be tough to beat. And I think it'll be the same way in, 12 days, Super Bowl?
So how far are the Seahawks right now from competing at that level again?
Yeah, they're what, $60 million in cap space and about 10 draft picks away? I mean, this has got to be an offseason. And the nice thing about football, unlike baseball or basketball, you can close that gap in a hurry. They are not 10 players away, but they are certainly two, three, four impact players away defensively from being anywhere near where San Francisco was.
But they, if they make the right choices.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I think that starts with Clowney. You got to sign him back. Period. End of story. You have the money to do it. You have to do that. And then you're going to have another, I don't know, 30, 40 million bucks to, you know, when they made that step, when they went in 2012, about where the Seahawks are right now, and they took that next step, it was Cliff Avril, it was Michael Bennett, it was the right guys filling the right spots to take that next step. They got him offensively. Seattle's offense with DK and Tyler and Russell and Chris and the young linemen, like Will Disley, I feel good about their offense.
Yeah.
They just need some of them thoroughbreds defensively.
The other story I've been fascinated with, I talked about it on my show a few days ago, this baseball cheating scandal.
Yeah.
Where the Astros are stealing signs, immediately relayed it to somebody in the dugout, and if it was an off-speed pitch, they started pounding a garbage can to let the batter know that it wasn't a fastball. And it was just such a blatant level of cheating that apparently it's been going on for a couple of years, right?
Yes. And apparently, in talking to people in the know that have written about this and studied this and know all of it a lot deeper than you and I do, baseball had said to the Astros, knock it off. All right, knock it off. We knew this in 2017. We told you guys you're still not knocking it off. And now you're using technology, and now you're going to get the hammer. And now livelihoods are going to be lost, and reputations are going to be burned. And there was a whistleblower, Mike Fiers, a pitcher, that was the tipping point to put his name to it. That, to me, Dory, is what is so fascinating about baseball. How many guys through the years have been through the Astros organization?
Oh, yeah.
That played against the Astros? That played for them and then went elsewhere. Like, they all knew it. But that culture in baseball is just, you don't talk.
But the other part
you don't talk.
I don't understand is if you are achieving at the highest level of any sport, don't you want to win on a fair, even playing field?
But hasn't the essence of baseball always been, how do I gain that extra little advantage? How do I put a little more pine tar on my bat? How do I put a little bit of sandpaper in my mitt or on my belt buckle? How do I create a little more on my spitball? How do I cork my bat in a little, like, baseball through its generations has always had that. It's not cheating if we're all in it trying to do the same thing.
But if,
and yes, I am with you. I think it's cheating. I think it's stupid. I think you would go to sleep and have a hard time looking at the ceiling. Like, man, I corked my bat. Yeah, I took steroids. Yeah, you know, I used sandpaper. Yeah, I had extra pine tar.
Yeah.
Yeah, I stole their signs. Yeah, we were better at stealing signs. Yeah, we had all of their game plan, right? I mean, my older brother played for the Patriots. In the lengths that they would go to, whether it was a placebo effect or not, to go and dig through garbage cans at the opposing team's hotels and rummage through their team buses and try to find any piece of scrap paper.
What? Yes. Go through the team bus?
Oh, sure. Yeah, the visiting team bus, when it went from the airport to the team hotel, the New England Patriots would, you know, when that bus got back to the depot, would send their people over there. And was there any papers in any of the, you know, back of the seat, stuffed anywhere, anything left for them to rummage through, garbage cans, right? Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, they videotape, right? I mean, it's kind of been well known over the decades.
Well, the Patriots also, of course, were accused of taking a couple pounds air pressure out of the football.
And the Patriots were accused of Spygate.
Yeah.
And filming people, and, you know, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. And in baseball, I think that has been much of the culture for many years. I think the Astros were told blatantly by the commissioner, knock it off, knock it off. And by the third time when they wouldn't knock it off, then the hammer's going to
come
down.
There are some people who think their World Series title should be taken away. What do you think?
No.
It doesn't matter.
For who? And then they're going to give it to the Dodgers so they can go have a parade that they didn't win?
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. If you don't win it on the field, then you don't have the exhilaration. Your fans don't have any joy. You can put an asterisk in the record book, but that's not going to matter.
Nope.
Will this curtail it? Or are they just going to find... Because, I mean, they were allegedly wearing buzzers to get signals on what pitch was coming.
Doesn't Nicole do that to you?
Yeah, but she buzzes me?
Yeah.
Yeah, when I say, when I've gone too far.
I go to break.
Yes. When I finally have taken things too far. It's like my dog with the invisible fence.
Yes.
All right, Brock Heward, you can hear his podcast. access it through My Northwest and also Above and Beyond. You can get that through My Northwest. And good heaven.
And by the way, great
thanks to the house on Sunday.
Oh, that was such so much fun to make it happen. We'll look forward to our next guy time.
Okay. All right. I can't wait. And we have lots more straight ahead. It's the Dory Monson Show.
Rolls on.
Roll. I'm happy to tell you, because I like to get you exclusive information. I'm really upset at this kindergarten sex ed bill in Olympia. I don't think there's any need or reason to teach kindergartners, you know, K through 5, about sex ed, about transgenderism. But we do have a cult in this state that is trying to cut out parents, in my view, and make government responsible for our kids. And I've explained why many, many times. Because parents tend to want kids who are independent and self-sufficient. Government wants kids who are dependent and reliant on government for their well-being. And that's why there is, you know, Bernie Sanders, the most the profession that donates the most to Bernie Sanders, public school teachers. Because socialism is very much alive and well in our public schools. But now we're crossing over into teaching sex ed to kindergartners. This just passed out of the state Senate. It's going to the state house, just passed an hour ago. And I'm going to talk to the superintendent of public instruction about it next.